We need to do better on this. The question is just, how do we actually do it? Now, here's something that really bothers me and worries me about this epidemic of violence. The gross majority, close to 90% in some of the statistics I've seen, of the gun violence in this country is committed with illegally obtained firearms. And while we're on that topic, we know that thanks to Kamala Harris's open border, we've seen a massive influx in the number of illegal guns run by the Mexican drug cartel. So that number, the amount of illegal guns in our country is higher today than it was 3.5 years ago. But what do we do about the schools? What do we do to protect our kids? And I think the answer is, and I say this not loving the answer, because I don't want my kids to go to school in a school that feels unsafe or where there are visible signs of security. But I unfortunately think that we have to increase security in our schools. We have to make the doors lock better. We have to make the doors stronger. We've got to make the windows stronger. And of course, we've got to increase school resource officers, because the idea that we can magically wave a wand and take guns out of the hands of bad guys, it just doesn't fit with recent experience. So we've got to make our schools safer. And I think we've got to have some common sense bipartisan solutions for how to do that.
Governor, you have 2 minutes.
Well, I think all the parents watching tonight, this is your biggest nightmare. Look, I got a 17-year-old and he witnessed a shooting at a community center playing volleyball. Those awful things don't leave you. As a member of Congress, I sat in my office surrounded by dozens of the Sandy Hook parents, and they were looking at my 7-year-old picture on the wall. Their 7-year-old were dead, and they were asking us to do something. And look, I'm a hunter. I own firearms. The vice president is. We understand that the Second Amendment is there, but our first responsibility is to our kids to figure this out. In Minnesota, we've enacted enhanced red flag laws, enhanced background checks, and we can start to get data. But here's the problem. If we really want to solve this, we've got folks that won't allow research to be even done on gun violence. And this idea that we should just live with it, and I here's what I do think, that this is a good start to the conversation. I 100% believe that Senator Vance hates it when these kids, it's abhorrent and it breaks your heart. I agree with that. But that's not far enough when we know there are things that worked. I've spent time in Finland and seen some Finnish schools. They don't have this happen, even though they have a high gun ownership rate in the country. There are reasonable things that we can do to make a difference. It's not infringing on your Second Amendment. And the idea to have some of these weapons out there, it just doesn't make any sense. Kamala Harris, as an attorney general, worked on this issue. She knows that it's there. No one's trying to scaremonger and say, we're taking your guns. But I ask all of you out there, do you want your schools hardened to look like a fort? Is that what we have to go? When we know there's countries around the world that their children aren't practicing these types of drills. They're being kids. We owe it to them to get a fix. These are things that shouldn't be that difficult. You can still keep your firearms, and we can make a difference. We have to. If you're listening tonight, this breaks your heart.
Senator.
Tim, first of all, I didn't know that your 17-year-old witnessed a shooting, and I'm sorry about that, and I hope
appreciate
that he's doing okay.
So.
Christ have mercy. It is awful. And I appreciate what Tim said, actually, about Finland, because I do think it illustrates some of the frankly, weird differences between our own country's gun violence problem and Finland. Is okay, first of all, we have way higher rates of mental health abuse or mental health substance abuse. We have way higher rates of depression, way higher rates of anxiety. We unfortunately have a mental health crisis in this country that I really do think that we need to get to the root causes of, because I don't think it's the whole reason why we have such a bad gun violence problem, but I do think it's a big piece of it. Another driver of the gun violence epidemic, especially that affecting our kids, it doesn't earn as many headlines, but is the terrible gun violence problem in a lot of our big cities. And this is why we have to empower law enforcement to arrest the bad guys, put them away, and take gun offenders off the streets. I think there's a whole host of things that we can do here, but I do think at our schools we've got to talk about more security.
Senator, thank you. Governor, you previously opposed an assault weapons ban, but only later in your political career did you change your position. Why?
Yeah, I sat in that office with those Sandy Hook parents. I've become friends with school shooters. I've seen it. Look, the NRA, I was an NRA guy for a long time. They used to teach gun safety. I'm of an age where my shotgun was in my car so I could pheasant hunt after football practice. That's not where we live today. And several things I want to mention on this is, talking about cities and where it's at, the number one where the most firearm deaths happen in Minnesota are rural suicides. And we have an epidemic of children getting guns and shooting themselves. And so we have and we should look at all of the issues. Making sure folks have health care and all that, but I want to be very careful. This idea of stigmatizing mental health, just because you have a mental health issue doesn't mean you're violent. And I think what we end up doing is we start looking for a scapegoat. Sometimes it just is the guns. It's just the guns, and there are things that you can do about it. But I do think that this is one, and I think this is a healthy conversation. I think there's a capacity to find solutions on this that work, protect Second Amendment, protect our children. That's our priority.
Gentlemen, thank you. Margaret?
Thank you, Nora. Let's turn now to the top contributor to inflation, the high cost of housing and rent. There's a shortage of more than 4 million homes in the United States, and that contributes to the high housing prices. Governor Walz, the Harris campaign promises a $25,000 down payment assistance for first-time home buyers and a $10,000 tax credit. They also promise to build 3 million new homes. Where are you building these homes, and won't handing out that kind of money just drive up prices higher?
No, it's not handing out. We have, first, let me say this, this issue of housing, and I think those of you listening on this, the problem we've had is that we've got a lot of folks that see housing as another commodity. It can be bought up, it can be shifted, it can be moved around. Those are not folks living in those houses. Those of you listening tonight, that house is a big deal. I bought and owned one house in my life. My mom still lives in the house where I was. And when I think of a house, I'm thinking of Christmas services after midnight mass where you go with your family. We need to make it more affordable. And one of the things, as I said, this program that the vice president is pushing forward and bringing a new way of approaching this is something we're doing in Minnesota from that lead. We in the state invested in making sure our housing was the biggest investment that we'd ever made in housing. It starts to make it easier. We cut some of the red tape. Local folks, look, we can't do it at the federal level, but local folks make it easier to build those homes. And then that down payment assistance. I can tell all of you out there, one of the, certainly for me, using the GI Bill was one thing, but a veteran's home loan, the big thing about a veteran's home loan is you don't have to pay the down payment. Those are things that make it there. Now, look, you're going to pay it back, and you're going to pay your mortgage. Those are things that we know in the long run, the appreciated value, the generational wealth that's created from it. And I will give Minneapolis an example. Minneapolis is the one city where we've seen the lowest inflation rates. We've seen a 12% increase in stock because we've put some of these things in, and we're implementing a state program to make sure we give some of that down payment assistance. We get it back from people because here's what we know. People with stable housing end up with stable jobs. People with stable housing have their kids able to be able to get to school. All of those things in the long run end up saving our money. And that's the thing that I think we should be able to find some common ground in, but we can't blame immigrants for the only reason. That's not the case that's happening in many cities. The fact of the matter is that we don't have enough naturally affordable housing, but we can make sure that the government's there to help kickstart it, create that base.
Governor, your time is up. Senator Vance, on as far as your campaign's position, the promise is to seize federal lands to build homes, remove regulation, provide tax breaks, and cut back on immigration, which you say pushes up prices. Where are you going to build all the new homes you're promising, and what part of any of this plan will provide immediate relief? You have 2 minutes.
Well, first of all, Tim just said something that I agree with. We don't want to blame immigrants for higher housing prices, but we do want to blame Kamala Harris for letting in millions of illegal aliens into this country, which does drive up costs, Tim. 25 million illegal aliens competing with Americans for scarce homes is one of the most significant drivers of home prices in the country. It's why we have massive increases in home prices that have happened right alongside massive increases in illegal alien populations under Kamala Harris's leadership. Now, Tim just mentioned a bunch of ideas. Now, some of those ideas I actually think are halfway decent, and some of them I disagree with. But the most important thing here is Kamala Harris is not running as a newcomer to politics. She is the sitting vice president. If she wants to enact all of these policies to make housing more affordable, I invite her to use the office that the American people already gave her, not sit around and campaign and do nothing while Americans find the American dream of homeownership completely unaffordable. Now, you asked, Margaret, what would immediately change the equation for American citizens if you lower energy prices? As Donald Trump says, drill, baby, drill, one of the biggest drivers of housing costs aside from illegal immigration is, think about it, if a truck driver is paying 40% more for diesel, then the lumber he's delivering to the job site to build the house is also going to become a lot more expensive. If we open up American energy, you will get immediate pricing relief for American citizens, not, by the way, just in housing, but in a whole host of other economic goods, too.
Senator Vance, you still have 23 seconds there. Do you want to answer?
Can I have it?
Where? Yeah. Governor, we will get to you in a moment. But, Senator, where are you going to seize the federal lands? Can you clarify?
Well, what Donald Trump has said is we have a lot of federal lands that aren't being used for anything. They're not being used for a national park. They're not being used, and they could be places where we build a lot of housing. And I do think that we should be opening up building in this country. We have a lot of land that could be used. We have a lot of Americans that need homes. We should be kicking out illegal immigrants who are competing for those homes, and we should be building more homes for the American citizens who deserve to be here.
Senator, your time is up. Governor, I do want to let you respond to the allegation that the vice president is letting in migrants.
Well, of course, that's not true. And again, you have the facts. I guess we agreed not to fact check. I'll check it. That, look, crossings are down compared to when Donald Trump left office. But it's, again, blaming and not trying to find the solution. I was going to ask, though, on this question, are we going to drill and build houses in the same federal land? And I think when people hear federal lands, these are really important pieces of land. Now, Minnesota doesn't have a lot of federal lands. I know in the western part of the country we do. There's not a lot of federal lands in and around Minneapolis, for example. So the issue is I don't understand the federal lands issue unless we see this, and I worry about this as someone who cares deeply about our national parks and our federal lands. Look, Minnesota, we protect these things. We've got about 20% of the world's fresh water. These lands protect. They're there for a reason. They belong to all of us. But again, this is when you view housing and you view these things as commodities. Like, there's a chance to make money here. Let's take this federal land and let's sell it to people for that. I think there's better ways to do this. We've seen it in Minnesota. We're able to refurbish some of these houses. We're able to make some investments. That gets people in. And I'm still on the fact on this. Economists, Senator Vance, you said you don't like the economists. Which economists are saying that it is immigrants that's adding to the cost?
Governor, your time is up. But Senator, on that point, I'd like for you to clarify. There are many contributing factors to high housing costs. What evidence do you have that migrants are part of this problem?
Well, there's a Federal Reserve study that we're happy to share after the debate. We'll put it up on social media, actually, that really drills down on the connection between increased levels of migration, especially illegal immigration, and higher housing prices. Now, of course, Margaret, that's not the entire driver of higher housing prices. It's also the regulatory regime of Kamala Harris. Look, we are a country of builders. We're a country of doers. We're a country of explorers. But we increasingly have a federal administration that makes it harder to develop our resources, makes it harder to build things, and wants to throw people in jail for not doing everything exactly as Kamala Harris says they have to do. And what that means is that you have a lot of people who would love to build homes who aren't able to build homes. I actually agree with Tim Walz. We should get out of this idea of housing as a commodity. But the thing that has most turned housing into a commodity is giving it away to millions upon millions of people who have no legal right to be here.
What are the federal regulations? I deal with this as a governor.
You can very quickly reply.
I'm sorry. I get this as a governor, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, that in some cases, many of those are local, many of them are state. I don't know which ones are federal, but I think whenever we talk regulations, people think they can get rid of them. I think you want to be able to get out of your house in a fire. I think you want to make sure that it's fireproof and those types of things. So which are the regulations? Because the vice president's not responsible for those. Congress writes those.
Governor, thank you. Gentlemen, we have a lot to get to. You're passionate about the housing crisis, I can tell. But Nora?
Thank you. One of the top problems facing Americans is the high cost of health care. Senator Vance, at the last presidential debate, former President Trump was asked about replacing the Affordable Care Act. In response, he said, "I have concepts of a plan." Since then, Senator, you've talked about changing how chronically ill Americans get health insurance. Can you explain how that would work? And can you guarantee that Americans with pre-existing conditions won't pay more? I'll give you 2 minutes.
Well, of course, we're going to cover Americans with pre-existing conditions. In fact, a lot of my family members have gotten health care. I believe, you know, members of my family actually got private health insurance, at least for the first time, switched off of Medicaid onto private insurance for the first time under Donald Trump's leadership. And I think that, you know, a lot of people have criticized this concepts of a plan remark. Look, it's very simple common sense. I think as Tim Walz knows from 12 years in Congress, you're not going to propose a 900-page bill standing on a debate stage. It would bore everybody to tears, and it wouldn't actually mean anything because part of this is the give and take of bipartisan negotiation. Now, when Donald Trump was actually president, and again, he has a record to be proud of, prescription drugs fell in 2018 for the first time in a very long time. Under Kamala Harris's leadership, prescription drugs are up about 7%. Under Donald Trump's entire 4 years, they were up about 1.5%. He introduced pricing transparency. Think about health care. You go into a hospital, you try to buy something, and nobody knows what it actually costs. That price transparency will actually give American consumers a little bit more choice and will also drive down costs. And we talked about, you know, the reinsurance regulations is what I was talking about. Look, Donald Trump has said that if we allow states to experiment a little bit on how to cover both the chronically ill but the non-chronically ill, it's not just a plan. He actually implemented some of these regulations when he was president of the United States. And I think you can make a really good argument that it salvaged Obamacare, which was doing disastrously until Donald Trump came along. And I think this is an important point about President Trump. Of course, you don't have to agree with everything that President Trump has ever said or ever done. But when Obamacare was crushing under the weight of its own regulatory burden and health care costs, Donald Trump could have destroyed the program. Instead, he worked in a bipartisan way to ensure that Americans had access to affordable care. It's not perfect, of course, and there's so much more that we can do, but I think that Donald Trump has earned the right to put in place some better health care policies. He's earned it because he did it successfully the first time.
Governor?
All right, here's where being an old guy gives you some history. I was there at the creation of the ACA, and the reason it was so important is I come from a major health care state, home of the Mayo Clinic, home to Medical Alley, 3M, Medtronic, all of those. We understand healthcare. It's why we're ranked first on affordability and accessibility and quality of healthcare. And so what I know is under Kamala Harris, more people are covered than they have before. And those of you listening, this is critical to you. Now, Donald Trump all of a sudden wants to go back and remember this. He ran on the first thing he was going to do on day one was to repeal Obamacare. On day one, he tried to sign an executive order to repeal the ACA. He signed on to a lawsuit to repeal the ACA, but lost at the Supreme Court. And he would have repealed the ACA had it not been for the courage of John McCain to save that bill. Now, fast forward, what that means to you is you lose your pre-existing conditions. If you're sitting at home and you got asthma, too bad. If you're a woman, probably not. Broke your foot during football, might kick you out. Your kids get kicked out when they're 26. Kamala Harris negotiated drug prices for the first time with Medicare. We have 10 drugs that will come online, the most common ones that will be there. But look, this issue, and when Donald Trump said, I've got a concept of a plan, it cracked me up as a fourth grade teacher because my kids would have never given me that. But what Senator Vance just explained might be worse than a concept, because what he explained is pre-Obamacare. And I'll make this as simple as possible because I have done this for a long time. What they're saying is, if you're healthy, why should you be paying more? So what they're going to do is let insurance companies pick who they insure, because guess what happens? You pay your premium, it's not much. They figure they're not going to have to pay out to you. But those of you a little older, gray, you know, got cancer, you're going to get kicked out of it. That's why the system didn't work. Kamala Harris will protect and enhance the ACA.
Governor, thank you. Senator, you have not yet explained how you would protect people with pre-existing conditions or laid out that plan.
Well, look, we currently have laws and regulations in place right now that protect people with pre-existing conditions. We want to keep those regulations in place, but we also want to make the health insurance marketplace function a little bit better. Now, what Governor Walz just said is actually not true. A lot of what happened and the reason that Obamacare was crushing under its own weight is that a lot of young and healthy people were leaving the exchanges. Donald Trump actually helped address that problem, and he did so in a way that preserved people's access to coverage who had pre-existing conditions. But again, something that these guys do is they make a lot of claims about if Donald Trump becomes president, all of these terrible consequences are going to ensue. But in reality, Donald Trump was president. Inflation was low. Take-home pay was higher. And he saved the very program from a Democratic administration that was collapsing and would have collapsed absent his leadership. He did his job, which is govern in a bipartisan way and get results, not just complain about problems, but actually solve them.
Governor, did enrollment under the Affordable Care Act go up under the Trump administration?
It's higher now that we've seen it go up. Look, people are using it. The system works. And the question about this of young people, whatever, that's the individual mandate piece of this. And Republicans fought tooth and nail saying, well, Americans should be free to do this. Well, then
so
what happens?
So you think the individual mandate's a good idea?
I think the idea of making sure the risk pool is broad enough to cover everyone, that's the only way insurance works. When it doesn't, it collapses. You are asking pre-ACA where we get people out. Look, people know that they need to be on health care. People expect it to be there. And when we are able to make it, and we are making it this way, when we incentivize people to be in the market, when we help people who might not be able to afford it get there, and we make sure then when you get sick and old, it's there for you. Because I heard people say, well, I don't want to buy into Medicare or whatever. Good luck buying health care once you get past 70. So look, the ACA works. We can continue to do better. Kamala Harris did that. The way she made everything better was negotiating those 10 drugs on Medicare for the first time in American history.
Thank you. Margaret.
Can I address that?
I apologize. We're out of time. We have a number of subjects to discuss. Margaret.
Let's talk about families in America. There is a child care crisis in this country, and the United States is one of the very few developed countries in the world without a national paid leave program for new parents. Governor Walz, you said that if Democrats win both the White House and Congress, this is a day one priority for you. How long should employers be required to pay workers while they are home taking care of their newborns? You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's negotiable, and that's what Congress worked. But here's what the deal is. Americans sitting out there right now, you may work for a big company. Look, we're home in Minnesota to some of the largest Fortune 500 companies. Kamala Harris knows that in California. Those companies provide paid family medical leave. One is, I think they're moral and they think it's a good thing, but it also keeps their employees healthy. We in Minnesota passed a paid family medical leave. You have a child, you. And I had to go back to work 5 days after my kids were born. This allows you to stay home a certain amount of time. What we know is that gets the child off to a better start. The family works better. We stay in their employers. We get more consistency in that. So Kamala Harris has made it a priority. We implemented it in Minnesota, and we see growth. That's how you become a pro-business state. But the negotiations on it, and here's the issue. Those big companies are able to offer it. Those of you out there who don't have it, just imagine what happens if you get cancer or your child gets sick. We know what happens. You end up staying home. In some cases, that means no paycheck because you've got no protection on that. This is the case of an economy that Donald Trump has set for the wealthiest amongst us. He's willing to give those tax breaks to the wealthiest. He's willing to say, bust those unions up, do whatever. What we're saying is the economy works best when it works for all of us. And so a paid family medical leave program, and I will tell you, go to the families or go to the businesses and ask them. As far as childcare on this, you have to take it at both the supply and the demand side. You can't expect the most important people in our lives to take either our children or our parents to get paid the least amount of money. And we have to make it easier for folks to be able to get into that business and then to make sure that folks are able to pay for that. We were able to do it in Minnesota, and I'm still telling you this. We were listed as the best state. We're still in crisis on this. A federal program of paid family medical leave and help with this will enhance our workforce, enhance our families, and make it easier to have the children that you want.
Governor, your time is up. Senator, do you support a national paid leave program? And if so, for how long should employers be mandated to pay their employees while they are home taking care of their newborn? You have 2 minutes.
Yeah, well, first of all, Margaret, a number of my Republican colleagues and some Democrats, too, have worked on this issue. And I think there is a bipartisan solution here because a lot of us care about this issue. I mean, look, I speak from this very personally because I'm married to a beautiful woman who is an incredible mother to our three beautiful kids, but is also a very, very brilliant corporate litigator. And I'm so proud of her. But being a working mom, even for somebody with all of the advantages of my wife, is extraordinarily difficult. And it's not just difficult from a policy perspective. She actually had access to paid family leave because she worked for a bigger company. But the cultural pressure on young families and especially young women, I think makes it really hard for people to choose the family model they want. A lot of young women would like to go back to work immediately. Some would like to spend a little time home with the kids. Some would like to spend longer at home with the kids. We should have a family care model that makes choice possible. And I think this is a very important substantive difference between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris's approach. I mean, look, if you look at the federal programs that we have that support paid family leave right now, the Community Development Block Grant, and there's another block grant program that spends a lot of money from the federal government. These programs only go to one kind of child care model. Let's say you'd like your church maybe to help you out with child care. Maybe you live in a rural area or an urban area and you'd like to get together with families in your neighborhood to provide child care in the way that makes the most sense. You don't get access to any of these federal monies. We want to promote choice in how we deliver family care and how we promote child care because, look, it is unacceptable. And, you know, of course, Tim and I have been on the campaign trail a lot the past 7 or 8 weeks. And one of the biggest complaints I hear from young families is people who feel like they don't have options, like they're choosing between going to work or taking care for their kids. That is an incredible burden to put on American families. We're the only country that does it. I think we could do a heck of a lot better.
Senator, thank you. You have also said, Senator Vance, many things about the American family. The Federal Reserve says parents will spend nearly as much on child care as they do on housing each month. So I want to get your thoughts on this. President Trump recently said, as much as child care is talked about as being expensive, it's, relatively speaking, not very expensive compared to the kinds of numbers we'll be taking in. Is President Trump committed to the $5,000 per child tax credit that you have described? You have 1 minute.
Well, what President Trump said, Margaret, I just want to defend my running mate here a little bit, bringing in a lot of money by penalizing companies for shipping jobs overseas and penalizing countries who employ slave laborers and then ship their products back into our country and undercut the wages of American workers. It's the heart of the Donald Trump economic plan. Cut taxes for American workers and American families. Cut taxes for businesses that are hiring and building companies in the United States of America, but penalize companies and countries that are shipping jobs overseas. That's the heart of the economic proposal. And I think what President Trump is saying is that when we bring in this additional revenue with higher economic growth, we're going to be able to provide paid family leave, child care options that are viable and workable for a lot of American families.
Can you clarify how that will solve the child care shortage?
Well, because as Tim said, a lot of the child care shortage is we just don't have enough resources going into the multiple people who could be providing family care options. And we're going to have to, unfortunately, look, we're going to have to spend more money. We're going to have to induce more people to want to provide child care options for American families, because the reason it's so expensive right now is because you've got way too few people providing this very essential service.
Thank you, Senator. Governor Walz, your ticket also has some child care tax credit proposals. Do you think Congress will agree to the $6,000 credit for newborns and $3,000 credit for children over the age of six, as your campaign has promised? Is that realistic?
Well, if these members of Congress are listening to anybody, I can tell you. And this is the biggest issue. Everybody listening tonight knows. I mean, I'm sure they were shocked to hear it's not that expensive. And let's be clear, whether it's $5,000 or $6,000, that pays you about 3 or 4 months. Let's be clear of where we're at on this. It's because we got out of an imbalance on this. We thought we were going to get by not paying people. I don't think Senator Vance and I are that far apart. I'm not opposed to what he's talking about on options. We've done scholarship types of things. I think we need to be open to making the case. But the issue here is, the question you asked is, you're not going to pay for it with these tariffs. That's just adding another $4,000 on the family and taking less. So not only do they not get the money to pay for that, they're $4,000 in the hole. That's Wharton School. That's his alma mater. And so I think the issue here is, if those members of Congress, I can't believe they're not. When I go to businesses, sure, they'll talk about taxes sometime, but they will lead with child care and they will lead with housing, because we know the problem is, especially in a state like Minnesota, we need more workers because our economy is growing, but we need the workforce.
Governor, thank you. We need to move on. Nora?
Let's talk about the state of democracy, the top issue for Americans after the economy and inflation. After the 2020 election, President Trump's campaign and others filed 62 lawsuits contesting the results. Judges, including those appointed by President Trump and other Republican presidents, looked at the evidence and said there was no widespread fraud. The governors of every state in the nation, Republicans and Democrats, certified the 2020 election results and sent a legal slate of electors to Congress for January 6th. Senator Vance, you have said you would not have certified the last presidential election and would have asked the states to submit alternative electors. That has been called unconstitutional and illegal. Would you again seek to challenge this year's election results, even if every governor certifies the results? I'll give you 2 minutes.
Well, Nora, first of all, I think that we're focused on the future. We need to figure out how to solve the inflation crisis caused by Kamala Harris's policies.